6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt.
And I'm Sir Jimmy of House Nuts. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are into Tyrion 6 of A Storm of Swords, which is definitely a chapter I've been pretty excited to get to after the depressing last two chapters. Amazing chapters, but very depressing. It'll be cool to kind of transition to King's Landing and start getting set up for the purple wedding out. Not the red wedding, Matt, but the purple wedding.
I know. It actually is... It's just so interesting, the roller coaster that is A Storm of Swords, right? Because we've been doing all this stuff in the Red Wedding, and now we get there. And, you know, if you're reading this for the first time or you're watching this for the first time, it immediately feels like, oh my God, like it's over. Like Starks are done, right? And then I actually do love how they immediately shift to, and this comes back to where I think George Martin, the decisions he made when writing this, and I think the decisions he's still struggling with, is who tells the story with these point of view chapters.
Yeah, for sure.
Right? Yeah. Because he could have gone to this from Sansa's point of view, but instead we get Tyrion's, right? And you get Tyrion's point of view, and he's still trying to, like, you know, warm up to Sansa and figure out this whole wedding, you know, that they've been married and how their life's going to go. And, you know, his father's like, hey, I need you to, you know, knock her up, essentially. And instead of getting it from Sansa's point of view, where she would have to deal with Tyrion, it's just such an interesting dynamic. It's one of those things where now we have no chance of doing this, but it would be so interesting if he had actually, like, just sort of finished the books like most other authors have done. He totally could have come back and written, like,
stuff from different POVs. Yeah.
Stuff from different POVs, like a different point of view going through this chapter. And we get that in A Feast for Crows and A Dance of Dragons a little bit with, like, the Sam and John chapters.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, it would just be so interesting to see a lot of these chapters, which is why years ago, I did that big breakdown where I wanted to go through every character, but I only ended up doing John. And to talk about, if you want to do like a point of view read through, say, Sansa or whoever, you have to dive into it, especially Sansa and Arya, because they appear a lot in other people's chapters. Not as much with Arya when she goes off on her own, but certainly in a Game of Thrones, where you have to read like other people's point of views, because they're like tied up. Like Sansa's so tied up in Ned chapters, Arya chapters, and Tyrion chapters before she goes off on her own.
Yeah, for sure. And I think probably one of the biggest pieces of the writing process for George is, I bet you he's writing these events from multiple POVs and then figuring out which one works. So yeah, he might be writing some of these chapters two or three times, depending on the POV, right, and then trying to piece it together. I think the reason why Tyrion is the POV, this is just my guess, I think one of the reasons why, maybe not the solo reason, is that Tyrion represents our nuance in the Lannister POV to this point. Now, Jaime is starting to come around to a redemption arc in A Storm of Swords. We're getting his POV. He's becoming a little bit more complex, not just a child pusher out the window kind of guy, but more than that. Tyrion, I think everyone is pretty enamored with through the first three books. So you just had this awful event that has ruined Arya's life, has ended other lives of people that we appreciate in the story, all because of the Lannisters. Jaime Lannister sends his regards. And then George puts us immediately in a Tyrion Lannister POV. So all of our like nuance 3D opinions of these houses, it's kind of the magic of the series, because you could, in theory, be rooting for the Lannisters if you love Tyrion that much, or Jaime, as so many people come to do, I think, in Feast for Crows. So that would be my guess. It's like, oh, you hate the Lannisters right now, don't you? But here's Tyrion. And you're like, ah, okay, well, yeah, I do still like Tyrion.
I know. Yeah, it's just, yeah, it just makes it so good. And it's just one of the things I love and appreciate it. And it's one of the things we definitely see here today. And we'll get into that. But man, how's he doing, Jimmy?
Everything okay, you know, man? We're just making it through. Just making it through, trying to lower my handicap in golf, trying to read some good fantasy books. One of my favorite authors just released, well, actually, I have it early. It's releasing next week, next Tuesday, I think the 13th, is Drew Abercrombie. He's starting a new fantasy series called The Devils. It's going to be a trilogy. And Drew Abercrombie, good friends with George R. R. Martin. George R. R. Martin's a huge fan of him. And a lot of people feel like Drew Abercrombie was like the next iteration of a little bit more of a gritty or grim fantasy, like a dark fantasy, very character driven. I love the First Law series, which has, I think, 10 books in it now. They're separate series, so it's not like a massive thing like Malazan, but they're all kind of connected. So I've gotten a head start on that book. And let me tell you, I just love everything Drew Abercrombie does. It feels very Tarantino-esque. Like almost Tarantino writing a book, which is kind of cool.
Cool. You know, that's one of the ones you mentioned. I mean, I need to start, but
I think you would really enjoy it, because I think they're just a little easier to do on audio. Cause the audiobook narrator is named Stephen Pacey. He's in my corner of YouTube. A lot of people consider him the best audiobook narrator because of his performance in First Law. But fun fact, Matt, the guy who gets beheaded in season 2 House of the Dragon by Daemon, I believe it's Daemon, beheads him, was Stephen Pacey.
Oh, okay.
The audiobook narrator was decapitated in House of the Dragon.
Oh, cool. Cool.
Yeah.
Cool little Easter egg there. Oh, mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, with me, let's see. I talked a little bit about actually my, you know, I had some.
Ooh, yeah. How's your heart, dude?
Blood pressure issues. I'm like, actually, I had a handful of people reach out to it. So I really appreciate that. Sir Tanner, one of them, he's been listening for a long time. So I really appreciate all that. And yeah, everything's a little bit better. You know, stop the medication to start working out more. I'm tracking my blood pressure every day. It's going down. So I don't know. I mean, it's still high sometimes and stuff like that. So, but I think it's just a little more, you know, get back to the being, you know, Sir Matt of House Gaines. And seems like maybe we'll, you know, be able to fix that. And I don't know, I guess maybe cut out some ice cream, you know, here.
It's hard, man. It's hard. But I went to the pub last night, had 2 Guinness. I'm not gonna lie to you, man. I got a McFlurry on the way home. I haven't had a McFlurry in like a decade.
Jeez, I can't.
Dude, did you know they serve them in paper boxes now?
Yeah. So I had
what
actually
is that.
So the last time I had a McFlurry or I had anything was in Italy, and that's how they do it in a lot of the rest of the world. They serve stuff in like paper boxes and stuff like that. Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. I don't have a problem with the paper box. Okay. Paper straws, I have a problem with, but paper box, I didn't mind it, but they just took the Oreos and put it on top, and they did, yeah. You know, it used to be in the thing and they'd shake it and it was delicious. It was still very good, but I was
it's inflation, dude. It's killing
the world has changed, Matt. The world has passed me by. That's what I get for not eating a McFlurry for a decade, though.
Well, I mean, the ice cream machines have been
notoriously broken.
And notoriously, yeah. Who passed? Well, that was a law that passed, wasn't it? Wasn't there a law about that or something? Or a Supreme Court rule? There was
like
a big deal about there. Where McDonald's wasn't Yeah, where America was, their McDonald's wasn't allowed to do it, and then they changed it to where they could fix their own. And I think I remember reading that. And I don't know.
Well, Johnny Harris, you know, he's a huge YouTuber. He actually blew up, I believe, off of his McDonald's. Why is the ice cream machine in McDonald's always broken video? And now he's like, I mean, I think he's like an independent news agency or something at this point. He's kind of, I like his videos, but he's, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know. There's something.
Well, I think, and I have a little bit of news here. I think that we're probably staying in the small, because I don't think we're going to be doing any collaborations anytime soon.
Well, why is that, Matt?
So, we were, they didn't say, we couldn't say anything about this or anything, but ultimately I'm turning it down. Is, Jimmy and I, so behind the scenes, bend the knee news here.
Yeah.
Is we get reached out to by, everything we do right now through our podcast network. We get ads, like Manscaped and fun stuff like that. Yeah, Magic Mind.
Yeah, a lot of stuff that we've used. I mean,
I
have a Manscaped razor. Yeah.
I don't, but we did an ad for him, right? And it was fun. Like, and it's so much easier doing it that way, where we literally just have like a third party handle everything for us. So much easier. But we do get approached from time to time for like direct deals and all this stuff. And I've done some for my gaming YouTube channel and, Star Wars in the past and stuff like that. So I believe it's ultimately the Game of Thrones King's Road game, which we talked about a little bit here. Kind of reached out to us. I think it's like a third party marketing thing or whatever. And they wanted us to do like the whole deal is it's unclear. They wanted us to do like a review of the game or something like that and license us for like this like Reddit post and stuff like that, which is all sort of normal stuff, right? But we've already kind of gone on record saying we think the game sucks. I mean, like, I don't know what else, like, so I just don't want to come out here and then some ad where, plus I'll be honest, when it comes to mobile games, I hate those ads. Like, you see them on TikTok and YouTube where they're always playing the game where it's like some guy moving back and forth and he's like shooting barrels and and so I even saw the guy who plays Homelander did one. And it's like, dude, and then you see big celebrities doing those mobile games ads. Like, remember when Kit Harington did one? At least it was for like an actual Game of Thrones, like, thing. It's just, I just don't like it. I also just don't like the game itself.
Hey, and nothing against the devs and the team that made it. Like, right. I know there's a lot of
I'm glad it exists, and I actually hope it does well so that we get more stuff.
But we can't pretend as if we're playing at 20, we just can't. We can't do that, dude. There's no
right.
Way.
I mean, no way. And the like, I don't know, measly like $500 or whatever you would pay us to do that. I even asked, are we gonna get copies of the game? Like, do I get a copy of the game to like, hand out? Can we hand out? So I'm out. And if that causes us to never be able to work with Warner Brothers or any of these other people ever again, like I've seen other Song of Ice Fire creators get like invited to things. We haven't gotten shit. Okay.
And we were maybe this is
right. And maybe that's it, but I'm out. Sorry.
Hey,
just where we're at. I don't want to make an ad that's going to get posted all over Reddit.
Yeah.
Me being like, look how awesome this game is when I've already said it sucks.
Shill. You shill. I could feel it already. I mean, here's the thing, dude.
I mean, if you're gonna pay us like 10 grand, okay.
I'll sell my dignity and integrity for 10 grand. I mean,
right. And at the same time, like today, I know the Lannisters are gonna pay their debts, right?
Oh, yeah.
The rest of the realm doesn't know that they have money issues. We know Warner Brothers we know Warner Brothers financials, and they're not good.
So. Hey, the Zazzle, I've got a raise. So
Jesus.
Oh man. I'm finally starting to see a little bit. Like, I don't really engage too much online about A Song of Ice and Fire or Game of Thrones or anything, because we do this. Right. I like it to be here, But I did see something, I think it was like on the HBO subreddit or something, and somebody was talking about how shows tend to like fall off on HBO, which I have a whole tangent about that I'm not gonna do. My belief is that most of them do not. I think people just love to hate things, but whatever, it doesn't matter. I saw multiple people in the thread because people were saying House of Dragons trial is so good, now it's a horrible TV show, and so many people pushing back and being like, well, season 2 might not have been perfect, but like, let's be clear, it's HBO's fault. Like, HBO cut that season,
Yeah.
So it's nice to see like general people like bringing that up, and putting the fault at, you know, Warner Brothers' feet ultimately.
Again, it all comes down to the medium of which you're viewing. Like one of the biggest things I've noticed with social media is that every platform really is totally different. Like even the audiences on them are just totally different, because I think a lot of people literally just use that as their main thing. Like for me, when I got off Twitter, like, and every time I go back and I check Twitter, like, I don't know, once every like 6 weeks or something, because I do have like a bit of a following, and sometimes I post video game content, there's no stuff over there, and I'm just like, yeah, this crowd's not for me, man. Like, and then I even on like on YouTube, you've always said this, YouTube's way more negative. Like TikTok, totally different. TikTok's like totally positive, way more positive. Like,
yeah, I definitely feel like most of these platforms like don't add anything to my life anymore. And I'll be honest, like a lot of it came from us covering like House of the Dragon and us just being like, you know, balanced about things, being like, well, I didn't like this, but I really like this. Right. And like, they should maybe work on this. And then having, you know, those takes kind of like isolated, and then people telling us that we should die. And so I'm like, you know what? Maybe I don't need to be on the internet as much. So honestly, the only platform I engage in now is YouTube. That's all I do, you know? And I kind of stick to my corner. Luckily, you know, on the book side of things, everyone's been pretty cool. We see some inflammatory stuff on Bend the Knee because it is beyond books, right? Like the general population comes in, and as you know, people feel very strongly about it, and people are passionate, which is cool. I mean, I understand sometimes getting frustrated, especially if you feel like someone's missed the point. I saw someone comment on one of our shorts. I actually was going through it last night, and they were like, this is true, but you failed to mention, and they listed like five paragraphs, and I was like, I said all this in the video. You didn't watch the video. Like I actually made all the points. I was like, well, whatever. At least they were.
Well, shorts are hard too. And I've actually edited shorts sometimes to where as I'm editing it, I think it looks cool and good and stuff like that. And then I realize like after, like I see, like sometimes we'll get negative comments and I was like, oh yeah, well that's not really actually like the tone we said in the, like the actual podcast, which is why now it's, I think it's cool because you can link it to it, right?
Yeah,
or you can link to like the clip of it and stuff like that. Yeah, so it's just weird, yeah, to get everyone's different opinions, stuff like that. But we have been getting a lot of great comments on our videos and you know, ravens and stuff like that too. And that one we did the other week where we kind of went back there and redid Feast for Crows, just kind of defending it and stuff like that, was really cool. And I've actually seen some more pretty cool things. And somebody had one the other day that I think would be something cool for us to do, which is a definitive guide to like boiled leather, because they've heard us talk about it and they're like, you know, what exactly?
Yeah, and that's how we're gonna do the reread, right?
Right, but that might actually be something to do cool, like to do like a dedicated thing just to kind of share that and be like, okay, because there's actually a lot of people that do it different ways and stuff like that. So we'll definitely share our version of it and stuff like that. So,
but yeah, I like to think that, you know, you and I also, our audience is different in the fact that like our main audience is in audio, which tends to trend older. And I think it's people who maybe aren't as plugged into all the online communities. And some of these people have no idea what we're talking about. We're talking about boiled leather. So, you know, to give you guys an idea who don't know, it's a way of reading Dance with Dragons and Feast for Crows as one book. And it kind of going, well, there's different approaches to each of them. Some of them are more character driven. Some of them are more chronologically driven. But with that book being split, a lot of the stuff is happening simultaneously, even though there's also some stuff that's like post Feast for Crows that actually just happened in Dance with Dragons. So Matt and I, you know, we could do an episode kind of explaining, I think there's three or four ways of reading the books together. And maybe on that episode, we will decide which we're going to do, because we are in the back half of A Storm of Swords now. And once we complete this, we want to do our reread of Feast and Dance as one. Yeah. So we're going to be picking one of the methods.
Boiled leather, I think, is what's the most common. And that's just like an internet version of it. Or, you know, like
it's also a great name.
Right. But there are I've seen others out there as well. And I've seen some people argue for that and stuff like that. But we'll certainly decide it. But yeah, I think ultimately I want to go with like a chronological way of doing it, just because I think to me that seems like the most standard way of, as the other books would be going as well.
Yeah, I know there's one called Feast for Dragons, which is a sick name. It's so sick.
Yeah. So, and it'll make sense on the podcast feed, because we always say like, all right, this chapter, then this chapter. And so, but hey, with that, let's dive into today's chapter, which is Tyrion 6 of A Storm of Swords. Now, normally I read the entire summary, which is always from the Song of Ice and Fire wiki, the wiki of Ice and Fire. But every once in a while, man, they put out a summary that is like so long that it's like, it's like four pages. Like, I'm not reading all of that, right? So I'll read a little bit of some of it, and then we'll dive into it. So Tyrion and Sansa spend a joyless meal together, but with both not talking much. Sansa takes a joke Tyrion makes about the quality of the food as him criticizing her, but assures her that it is not her fault and that he has more serious matters to worry about. Besides, Joffrey, Cersei, and his father are what bothers him most. You know, there's three Dornishmen visiting for the king's wedding. He's settled into a comfort of the Red Keep, as far away from the Tyrells as possible. It kind of goes on a little bit. Again, I want to skip a lot of this stuff. But when he arrives at the Hand Solar, he finds Joffrey, Cersei, Kevin, Sir Kevin, and Grandmaster Pycelle, as well as his father. And they read a message that says that Rosalyn caught a fine fat trout. Her brother gives her a pair of wolf pelts for the wedding. Checking the seal, Tyrion realizes that the message comes from the twins. He asks whether Lord Walder Frey thinks he is being poetic. He realizes that the trout refers to Edmure Tully, but before he can speculate on the meaning of the pair of wolf pelts, Joffrey announces that Robb Stark is dead.
Well, that's a trout I wish had not been caught. What happened to old catch and release, Matt? What happened to those days?
Well, that's what Cersei did, or that's what what's her name? Catelyn did twice.
Yeah, that's very true.
She got Tyrion and she got Jaime released.
The golden rule does not apply in Westeros, however.
Yeah. So yeah, so there's so much to break down from this chapter that this is, now we're back to like really, really big chapters after we just had a really small one with Arya. That we can just take away some of the big points here. And as well, I always like to pull from the Song of Ice and Fire reread subreddit. So saying, you know, this is the first chapter after the Red Wedding events occur. This chapter makes me really wish Sansa would open up to Tyrion just a little bit. She has such a guard up around her, and rightfully so. She doesn't realize Tyrion is trying to be genuine and actually does want to be there for her. Of course, any chance of that happening goes out the window when Tyrion has his realization at the end of the chapter. And when do you imagine Sansa will be at her most fertile? Before or after I tell, you know, her how we murdered her mother and her brother? This chapter is such a downer when it seems like the bad guys are winning and there's no hope left. With all that said, I do really enjoy the chapter, as I do most Tyrion chapters, and the ball is now rolling and the pace doesn't slow down for the rest of the book. And yeah, this is, it's almost like, right, it's almost like you're pushing a stone up a hill, right? Or like up a mountain. And now you've passed that first peak, and now we're speeding along down the hill until we ramp all the way back up again.
Very much two climaxes in this book, which ironically a lot of my favorite fantasy books have two climaxes. Bone Hunters and Malazan is a great example. Yeah. This was like a big siege, and then there's a plague at the end of the book, and they're both pretty horrifying. Very similar to Storm of Swords in the formatting of it. But for me, Sansa's so tragic, and yes, she should maybe open up to Tyrion a little bit. Like, we would love for her to do that, but is it not completely justifiable that she would not at this point? I mean, we're talking about a character in book one who was so trusting of ideals and of fairy tales and statuses and titles, only to have all of that come crashing down on her head when her father is decapitated and she is to be wed to a monster named Joffrey Baratheon. So it's one of these things where we're begging her, just listen to Tyrion a little bit, but also completely reasonable that she would not trust anyone. And I think that is a pretty sad thing for the character arc of Sansa, right? Is the fact that she loses trust in people and that she has no one around her, and where she's at right now in the story, clearly Peter Baelish is not looking out for her best interest. But I do believe in the last two books, if we were ever to get them, that I think one of the big pieces of Sansa's character arc is beginning to trust again. But it will be the right people this time, which would make for a very beautiful reunion between her and Arya, right? Someone she did not like, treated very poorly, I would say, though Arya wasn't innocent in the first book. To have her come back around and being like, you know what, actually, I can trust you, I think would be a pretty beautiful moment for Sansa's character arc. But at this point, the story yeah, she's down bad. She seems to have no allies other than a drunken, you know, disgraced knight. But yeah, it's sad. Definitely would love for her to trust Tyrion and open up. But also the whole Ferdal thing's really disturbing, right? Like, I hate that. I hate that so much.
Yeah, it's bad. Yeah, this chapter really is, and that's, you know, one of the things that this actually I think is probably one of the most important, if not underrated, chapters in the series, because there is so much happening here in from really two characters' perspectives, both, you know, Tyrion and Sansa's. And this is one of those things where we talked a little bit about earlier, the point of view. This would be such a different read from Sansa's perspective. And I almost, it's like, you know, obviously we have this version, but, you know, she doesn't know yet that her brother's dead.
Right.
Right. And
she doesn't know the full scale of what's happened.
Yeah. She has no idea about the full scale. So it would almost be more, I don't want to say it's more interesting. George wrote it this way and we're just looking at it in hindsight. Mm-hmm. But that would be such an interesting way to read it, as you get like even a small Sansa chapter where she's with Tyrion and she doesn't know, you know, the details of it. But I think also the weight of it is now on Tyrion and the Lannister side. And I think that that's just such a more powerful way to do this, because now you're like even more worried about Sansa. So the weight of the worry and the weight of the fear of like, oh no, what's going to happen to Sansa now? Right. And because now it's well, now the imp, remember, book Tyrion is not as good looking as Peter Dinklage. Okay.
Right.
You know, you know what I mean? He is like nose is chopped off and he's a very ugly little imp, you know, really much so. And now you're hearing, now he's going to have to, you know, impregnate her and all this stuff. Jeez. The weight of that is pushing on him. I know it's bad. It's so bad. It's so bad. This medieval world that you're living in here. But I think doing it from Tyrion's point of view was ultimately the right call. But I mean, that just would have been such an interesting, that would be something, you know, we talked about last week or the week before, if we could ask George, like if we could ever interview him and ask him some questions, like, you know, what does, like, non wins a winner, like what decides, like what, you know, what was the decision behind like a chapter like that's being like, no, this should come from Tyrion's point of view. I mean, here he gets to move the story forward by having it being from Tyrion's instead of Sansa's point of view, by getting the information from Joffrey. And also, like, that's a big thing too.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance. Like your first home expansion. Or your first big lightning strike. There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Families agents. Life's better when you're under American Families roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
You know, but I mean, you still could have done it. Like, imagine if it's not in the hand of the king and Joffrey walks in and like Tyrion and Sansa are having, you know, breakfast or something. And then he tells it to her, because then he gets to like look in her eyes. There's just so many.
Yeah, it's one of the hardest parts about storytelling is once you pen it down, go through the edits and send it in, it's over. Like, it is sealed. Now, like you said, some authors do go back and write things for the POV. That's cool. But for the most part, the majority of writers, once it's done, it's done. You can only do it one way, and then you put it forward. I think another reason probably to give this chapter to Tyrion is that the end of this book is very much a Tyrion ending. We get the moment with Jaime, which really catapults Tyrion to a different character. Yeah, I mean, we've already talked about the intersection of Jaime and Tyrion as one starts to degrade and one is now looking for redemption and who's the hero and who's the villain of them. I don't think our terms hero and villain really apply too much to A Song of Ice and Fire. It's more about the perspective of who's looking at that character, whether or not they're good or evil. But this chapter also really gets to flex the way George is able to use information as tension. So with us in the head of Tyrion, who now does know about what happened, at least knowing something terrible happened, that information that's being withheld, and we're not seeing it from Sansa's POV, we are therefore secondarily worried about Sansa during a Tyrion chapter, which makes the investment so much more because you're flipping the pages hoping to get a Sansa chapter next. At least I was. So George has always been someone who manipulates information really, really well. And I think it's a little less annoying to read it from a POV who is aware of what's happened. Like if we got into a Sansa chapter and it was 20 pages and 18 pages is of her not knowing and then finding out at the very end, it would be effective. But I feel like those 18 pages would be laborious because we'd be like, I just want to find out what she thinks, like once she finds it out, right? Also, information travels very slowly in Westeros. We've talked about this so many times with like Arya hearing little things about the Red Wedding, but not quite the whole story with the phrase. And it's telling. It's obvious. It's clear as day that this was a pre-orchestrated event. There was deals made behind closed doors. It was going to happen one way or another. But the final like nail in that coffin to say, okay, this has absolutely been planned meticulously, is the fact that King's Landing finds out about the results so fast. Information does not travel this fast, usually, right? Immediately they know. Now, it could have been a few days. Like, we don't know how much time passes between, but there's always been a delay in information in this world, especially if we cross the narrow sea to Essos, where Dany finds out about Robert's death, you know, far into book
like,
two.
Right, yeah. It's like
it's so long. I think that's just just a little consistency thing where it's like, oh, that information traveled pretty quick for it to be, you know, a surprise. Clearly it was not. And I know that's obvious looking back, but it's just a little thing that George does to kind of keep the world consistent, I think.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
I agree. And it's one of those things too, where with like the information and like you said, how it's traveling, you know, like, it's almost shocking that Tyrion doesn't know about this first.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But he's also kind of been out of the loop since Blackwater.
Well, I think that's another thing that's pretty good about this is like he's been kicked out of, now he's no longer the hand, right? He's been kicked out of some things. And they actually talk a little bit about it with like the cook, right? And he's the food and he's thinking about like, mm-hmm. you know, he's been knocked down a few pegs. And I think you see that here. And especially a lot of it with the conversation he has with his father. And he's like sort of resulted to like, you know, he tries to make these jokes and his dad, you know, quips him about, you know, making jokes, and he proceeds to just make a bunch of jokes because that's like a coping mechanism for Tyrion. And I think that's part of this is that before, very much in A Clash of Kings, when Tyrion is the hand of the king, he mm-hmm. feels like he's on top running the show, and now mm-hmm. he's been knocked back to peg, and I think you see it a lot in this chapter.
Yeah, so let me ask you this. We know that Tyrion has been degraded in court a large amount due to Cersei. Cersei has schemed behind his back, tried to have him killed, whatever it might be. But we also have Tywin saying, you know, you brought your whore to court. That's unacceptable. Also, Tyrion is the outcast of the family. Doesn't really love the fact that Tyrion has a last name Lannister. But is there any consideration for the fact that Tywin knew what was coming with the Red Wedding and knew Tyrion could not be involved in it, so kept him in a position where he would be away from these secrets because he knew Tyrion would have something to say about it?
That's a good point. Yeah, probably. Tyrion and Tywin's relationship is one of the most, if not the most interesting, because I think Tywin on some hands, he seems to underestimate Tyrion, but on others, he seems to know exactly like how good and how useful Tyrion is. I think the person he underestimates all of us.
He underestimates.
I don't know that he underestimates Jaime. I think he overestimates Jaime.
I think he's just severely disappointed in Jaime's apathy towards all of his like motivations.
Right.
Like, gotta do this. Jaime's like,
he definitely underestimates Sansa or Cersei
and Tyrion. I think he does know Tyrion's smart though. I mean, anyone could tell that he has pretty good wit, but maybe he begrudges him just for the fact that he is smart. Like you'd be such a useful tool if you hadn't killed my wife and had not been born an imp, you know?
Yeah. I think if Tyrion didn't do as much, you know, whoring and drinking and stuff like that, I think Tywin would be a little more receptive to him. He would always view him as the, you know, like, you're the reason my wife's dead and that. So he would, but I mean, some of it is Tyrion's to blame. And that's actually a big part of this chapter too, by the way. This is also setting up, like you said, now that the Red Wedding is over and we're into the final stretch, we have really two more mega moments in this, which is, you know, the end of this, right? With Tyrion's huge moment, and then also the Purple Wedding, which is coming. But a lot of the seeds towards that are like planted here. You need to get Sansa pregnant, and you need to do, you know, this and that. And Tyrion deciding, I'm going to go in a different route, and I'm going to go on my own, and so much of that. So I have, there's actually some other cool stuff, and I'm going to read. This is, again, from the Song of Ice and Fire reread, diving into quite a bit of the good details of this. So there's a line, and what were you telling him? You know, a lot happens here, which is in their conversation, which stands out to me, though. It is in this exchange, which seems to hint at the baby switch that produces young Griff of A Dance with Dragons. It occurs when Tywin and Tyrion are discussing justice for Dorne, because that's also another big thing. This is a lot happens in this chapter. Dorne is really kind of being brought into the fold much more. We'd seen them coming in, you know, in the Tyrion chapter before, but now we're getting some of that backstory. We had come late to Robert's cause. It was necessary to demonstrate our loyalty. When I laid those bodies beside the throne, no man could doubt they had forsaken House Targaryen forever. And Robert's relief was palpable. As stupid as he was, even he knew that Rhaegar's children had to die if his throne was ever to be secure. Yet he saw himself as a hero, and heroes do not kill children. His father shrugged, I grant you. It was done too brutally. Elia need not to have been harmed at all. That was sheer folly, but herself, she was nothing. Then why did the mountain kill her? Because I did not tell him to spare her. I doubt I mentioned her at all. I had more pressing concerns. Ned Stark was rushing south from the Trident, and I feared I might come to swords between us. And it was an Aerys to murder Jaime with no more cause than spite. That was the thing I feared most, that and what Jaime himself might do. He closed a fist. Nor did I yet grasp what I had in Gregor Clegane, only that he was huge and terrible in battle. The rape. Even you will not accuse me of giving that command, I would hope. Sir Armory, which is Armory Lork, was almost as bestial with Rhaenys. I asked him afterwards why it required 100 thrusts to kill a girl of 2, you know, 3. He said she'd kicked him and would not stop screaming. If Lork had half the wits as gods gave a turnip, he would have calmed her with a few sweet words and used a soft silk pillow. His mouth twisted in distaste. The blood was in him. Prince Aegon's horrific death, however, isn't mentioned in this. This passage takes place after Tywin is obliged to send Joffrey to bed with a dose of dream wine and lets us know what he thinks about Joffrey's upbringing. It looks very contrast to young Griff's upbringing, which we learn about in A Dance of Dragons. It could be, you know, only a red herring or a stretch too far, yet combined with the other little hints that we see in A Dance of Dragons, it wouldn't be entirely surprising if young Griff were actually Rhaegar's son. And then on a side note, they talk about the cook. You know, there's a line, should some cook should be sorry, not you. You know, poor Tyrion, to go from having the best cook in King's Landing to suffer over overcooked peas, you know, is a come down, like I said earlier, where it's like, you know, he's getting knocked down as a kind of a theme of this. The first thing he'd have done after taking up residence in the Tower of Hand was inquire after the finest cook in the city after his after taking her into his service. So yeah, so a lot to break down. Like we talked about the Tywin Tyrion dynamic, but also this. Right. And I think this is actually kind of a good look into Tywin, and because there's no reason for Tywin to be playing the Game of Thrones with Tyrion in this conversation. Right. I don't think Tywin is one of the people we consider to be one of the smartest people in the series. Yeah. He definitely doesn't need the kids brutally murdered. Right. As long as they're dead to him, he's done his job. The claim is over. But actually, if anything, it makes him look worse, which is the problem he's about to be dealing with Oberyn Martell and Dorne. And yeah. So
it also shows that what goes around comes around, right? Like, you're not going to get away with that type of thing. And it is ironic that Tywin's saying, oh, I would never want them brutally murdered, while he just orchestrated the Red Wedding that we just read, right? Like, he just did not just a terrible thing, but something that's considered almost like sacrilege. Like, it's completely taboo for what he did. And yet he is saying, like, well, I'm not a monster. I mean, I wouldn't have brutally murdered anyone. We could have spared this person. Well, they didn't spare a damn person from the Red Wedding. So I actually think, I don't know if he's necessarily playing the Game of Thrones with Tyrion, but he's absolutely lying. Deluded. Like, he's coping, I think. Trying to maybe play with that. Maybe he wasn't sure how Tyrion feel about the Red Wedding, so he's trying to like soften his image to his son. Like, I mean, that's really the question, though, is like, if Tyrion had known about the Red Wedding, would he have tried to change it or stop it possibly? I don't know. Maybe Tywin thinks so.
Yeah. He probably would have said they're more used to us as captives. He probably would have stood up a little bit for Catelyn Stark because she spared him and did spare Jaime.
That is true.
They have her mother, and you could actually marry her off, right? I mean, she's old, but you still could marry her off. I mean, it comes down to how you value these, you know, these individuals and where you think the value lies. I mean, Catelyn, you could marry her off. I don't know. You could hand her. I would give her to, if you were going to do that, I'd give her to some, I don't know, give her to Baelish, really. I mean, I don't know. I mean,
Walter Frey.
Well, I mean, you'd, because Edmure is more important because he is the actual heir to River Run.
Right.
Which seems so weird that they don't just kill Edmure.
I think they just think he's an idiot. Like, he's of no threat. I think that's
right. But I mean, why not kill Edmure and then just say, we're in charge of the twins now, or we're in charge of River Run now.
Well, if you keep Edmure alive and you marry him off, you get the Riverlands in a way that is considered, like, you know, kosher, I guess, in some ways. But
brutally murder people in disobeying Kingsright, which they're going to think is all the gods, or not Kingsright.
But Edmure kept his word. Edmure did marry one of Frey's daughters. So in some respects, you could actually hide behind that and say, well, hey, we only took care of the people who were breaking oaths, right? Edmure kept his oath, so we kept him alive. We are fair here, you know, eye for an eye. And it does probably, I think this is a little loose, probably keeps the chance of rebellion down in the Riverlands.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit.
Yeah. What do you think about, cause you know, this, okay, look, what about some of the young Griff stuff that could potentially cause remember, George is writing this at this moment in time. He's still probably thinking 5-year jump is happening.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm under the assumption that young Griff is Blackfyre. I think that's
right.
Definitely.
But maybe at one point he
possibly. Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. George definitely writes things with the idea of being able to go either way later down the road. I think that's one of the reasons why Tyrion has some really interesting early chapters about dragon dreams and riding a dragon. And it's like, tumbling, well, maybe. And,
yeah.
Yeah. Hey, who knows? Like, maybe he was going to go somewhere with that. So he does keep things a little bit ambiguous. I would imagine to have something in his back pocket if he were to want to change the story. So at this point, I mean, we can't really say whether young Griff was imagined. Or if, or I, maybe I should say young Griff would be imagined as a Blackfyre. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting thought about it. Just because, you know, he's writing it here, you would have to imagine still with that time jump.
Oh, mind. Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. And he's definitely thinking time jump here.
Yeah. And to tell that, I mean, there's a lot, I mean, even without that, it's, you know, this, it does give you kind of an insight to, like I said, with Tywin and maybe, yeah, maybe, but I read it and I think, well, maybe Tywin's not as bad as we think, but yeah, good point. You know, last chapter he did orchestrate this like brutal murder, but again,
yeah, he's saying one thing and it's done.
Did
another.
He, right. Did he say, oh, this is exactly how it should be done. Or is he just giving the order, like kill this person? And he's assuming these people won't,
he knew they were going to be under protection of the house from breaking bread. Right. Like he knew that for sure. But also I'll just ask you, does it matter?
Yeah,
like doesn't matter. Like they're dead. You know, I've always thought that was an interesting, like, at least he went peacefully. And I'm like, yeah, well, he's still dead. So I don't know. To me, it's still a tragedy one way or another. Like, is there a more ethical way of murdering someone? Maybe, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Especially under the guise of protection, which is pretty terrible in this world.
Yeah. All right. Anything else? Anything else in this chapter? I know this chapter's pretty large, so
I'm just excited about Oberyn Martell. I'm just excited about Oberyn Martell, dude. He's one of the most compelling characters in this series, and it's ironic because he's not around very long, and he gives us one of the coolest fights in fantasy with him in the mountain, and how epic this is. Also, we've heard mentions of why the Martells do not like the Lannisters. We know the sack of King's Land. We knew all this stuff, right? But I was so invested the first time I read whenever Oberyn is, you know, speaking to the mountain, right? And he's just repeating those phrases over and over and over. It's so impressive how much I care about this history between these two families for how little page time it actually gets to this point.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll read the last little paragraph here, or last few paragraphs, just so. I'll kind of start here. So they talk a little bit about like what's the payoff for all this stuff. Like, what was the price for doing all this?
Yeah.
So the price was cheap by any measure. The crown shall grant River Run to Sir Emon Frey once the Blackfish yields. Lancel and Davin must marry Frey girls. Joy is to wed one of Lord Walder's natural sons when she is old enough, and Roose Bolton becomes Warden of the North and takes home Arya Stark. Arya Stark, Tyrion cocked his head, and Bolton? I might have known Frey would not have the stomach to act alone, but Arya? Varys and Sir Jocelyn search for her for more than half a year. Arya Stark is surely dead. So was Renly until the Blackwater. What does that mean? Perhaps Littlefinger succeeded where you and Varys failed. Lord Bolton will wed the girl to his bastard son. We shall allow the Dreadfort to fight the Ironborn for a few years and see if he can bring Stark's other bannermen to heel. Come spring, all of them should be at the end of their strength and ready to bend the knee. The North will go to your son by Sansa Stark if you ever find enough manhood in you to breed one. You forget it is not only Joffrey who must need to take a maidenhead. So then he just talks about, you know, the part we already mentioned. So this is also where the like Arya Stark business, the false Arya kind of business starts. Mm-hmm. Remember, we just read an Arya chapter. That's weird coming back and looking at this because, you know, we're so far ahead now. We're like, yeah, it's not, we don't even worry about it. But if you're reading this for the first time, remember, Arya gets knocked out. That's the end of the last chapter. And now you're thinking, oh my God, they have Arya too.
Yeah, it's true, right? Like,
yeah.
From he's kind of playing with us a little bit here. That's a really good point.
Yeah, because then you don't hear about Arya until, I mean, then it's like a Davos chapter, a Jon chapter, Bran, Daenerys. So, I mean, then you go back to Tyrion. I mean, Sansa, you don't even see Arya again for, let me see here. I mean, like, I don't know, 8-9 more chapters.
Mm-hmm.
Davos, John. Is that actually the last
sitting waiting?
Yeah, Arya. So it's about like 10 or 12 more chapters. I'm not looking at the list, so I was just kind of scrolling through. But yeah, so it's like it's a good while before you, and even in that Arya chapter, she's talking about like the first few paragraphs is almost like she's hungry, she's tired, and it's like, is she a prisoner? And then you get to her where she's with the cocaine. So you'd have to like go back to that. But yeah, kind of a very interesting way to end the chapter.
It is. You know what's funny about this is like, I think Tywin thinks he's doing Tyrion a favor here, being like, all you have to do is you know, get Sansa pregnant. And he has for so long harped on Tyrion for being someone who's going and whoring around. So it's like, well, if you want to contribute to the family, you're going to do your favorite thing in the world. Like, that's kind of Tywin's like stand. It's almost Tywin like mocking him in some ways. Yeah. If you're enough of a man, right? Like, it's just so dirty. And I do think Tyrion does crave to be useful. And I think that's what frustrates him is like, I'm so smart. Like, if you could see past what I am and you could see past, you know, what happened with my mother, you have the most useful of your children sitting right here. And to be reduced down to just basically being told to go and, you know, knock somebody up. And yeah. Tyrion's just like, you know, you just don't get it, Dad. You just certainly don't get it. And then I think he also resents a lot about Jaime and Cersei, maybe at least subconsciously with Jaime, definitely consciously with Cersei, that they're used to a greater degree than he is.
Yeah. Even though he got to be hand of the king.
And did, honestly, a decent job.
And saved the city.
Saved Blackwater, right? I mean, he did a pretty knock-up job. If all things even, I think that he was great. And he stood and fought. He showed bravery. He showed wit. He showed courage. He showed loyalty. I mean, he hates Joffrey. Yeah. But he still backed Joffrey that whole time. Like, he was loyal and has been rewarded with it absolutely, pretty much not at all, and is now being told to do something that's pretty heinous, I would say. Like, and Tyrion goes in and out kind of like, well, I wouldn't mind, but like, I know it's, you know, I know she doesn't want it. And like, this is cruel. And he can identify that it's cruel. So that little bit of empathy with Tyrion, I think, is kind of what makes him redeemable at this moment. Later down the road, he kind of gets rid of that, which is sad.
The show kind of teased a little bit of it. Like, we see Tyrion and Sansa have a kind of a conversation in like season 8, and like they're sitting by each other when the crypts are, you know, in that whole big Battle of Winterfell episode, Long Night. Do you think at all that they will have conversations or something like that in Winds of Winter that can come back? And they seemed a little more favorable to each other, because even Sansa's like, well, you know, Tyrion actually never like did anything with me. He never, you know, so she does kind of like at least find that somewhat redeemable.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's one of the things we were talking about earlier, about how Sansa's been pretty much stripped of all of her trust. And she's going to have to find her trust later in the series to be part of her character arc, I believe.
Yeah.
I think Tyrion is one of them.
That could actually be something like, it's kind of weird because Sansa in the books is so different. And we still have no idea really where she's going to go. Right.
Yeah.
Like Sansa, Tyrion. We have no idea. We have no idea, because it's so different with her not being with Bolton and everything, that maybe she, and if she doesn't end up like, Young Griff doesn't end up like kind of going there, because the Vale is such a mystery. Like, that army is just waiting to go pounce, and we don't know how the Battle of the Bastards and all that stuff's going to go, because again, it is so different, right? Where Daenerys and Tyrion could go over there, and like maybe that they meet up with them first or something, or they ally with them, because so it's just so
the Vale is a huge chess piece that we're not sure where he's going
to
land.
No clue. It's like the biggest mystery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it all ties into Stannis and
everything.
Pink Letter and all of that.
Everything.
Yeah. Like, how does that unfold? Especially with the timelines are different, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's wild. Yeah. Hardhome is in a completely different space in the plot. Like, it's pretty major. And John's dead right now, by the way.
John's dead. Yeah.
John is dead.
Yeah. So different. All right. Well, hey, guys, with that, as always, I want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. Our next episode, we will be discussing A Storm of Swords, Chapter 54, Davos. Been a while.
Mm-hmm. Been a minute, but we will be back with the Onion Night, which I'm pretty excited for. And if you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheneepodcast.com.
We'll see you next time. And remember that winter is coming.
Months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.